Right. Good morning. I would like to call the House Education Committee to order. Today is January 24th, 2024. Let the record reflect the time is 8:01 a.m. Today we have present Representative McKay, Representative McCormick, Representative Himshute, Representative Story, and myself, Co-Chair Ruffridge. And so we do have a quorum to conduct business. I would like to remind the committee members and those in the audience to please silence or turn off your cell phones. And the staff assisting us today are Linda Jensen with House Records. Thank you, Linda. And Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO. Welcome back, Zach. And we have the following items on our agenda today. We have Senate Bill 99, Financial Literacy, from Senator Willikowski. And thank you for joining us this morning. And then we have Hunter Lofsfeld, staff to Senator Willikowski. And let the record show that we've been joined by Representative Prox at 8:02 a.m. And then we do have some folks calling in for invited testimony as well. Anything from the committee before we get started? No? All right. Well, take us away, Senator.
All right. Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bill Willikowski. I'm a state senator representing East Anchorage. I appreciate you taking time this morning to hear this bill. This bill requires that school districts establish a one-half credit financial literacy course to be taught and that students take while in high school. In our modern complex society, it is my belief that all students should graduate with some fundamental understanding of financial literacy. Basic things like how to make a budget, how to apply for loans, how to apply for financial aid. We've got the worst financial aid application rates in the United States, how to open a bank account, how to compute interest, things that are absolutely critical for really anyone in our society to understand, have a basic understanding of, these things be taught in high school. The statistics in the United States, and particularly in Alaska, show that we are not doing well in financial literacy front. As you'll see, only one-third of Americans can cover a $400 emergency. Alaska has the highest credit card debt in the United States by far. There are national organizations that grade financial literacy, and Alaska has received an F in those ratings. I know there's some concerns about this being a mandate. We worked on the Senate side with the school districts, with school boards, with superintendents to try to make this as palatable as possible. I understand the concern that people have against mandates in schools, and certainly teachers are pressed. And so one of the things that we said we changed was taking this from being a requirement for one particular course to saying that it can be spread over a series of courses. And just to give you an example, in the Anchorage School District, they're teaching financial literacy right now. And they do offer a specific course, but they're doing it also through a variety of other courses. For example, I know my daughter's in high school, and in her algebra class, they learned about interest last week. So they're in economics, they'll learn about some other aspects. But important things that we think will really benefit our students, help us become more competitive in the American and global economy. And then as far as curriculum goes, you'll hear some testimony from some people, I believe, Mr. Chairman, that there is a wide array of curriculum that's available nationally. It's free. I don't think getting curriculum on this will be an issue at all. It's our intent to make this as palatable for school districts, as easy to work for the school district as possible. Again, I'm sensitive to the mandate issue. I understand that schools have a challenge, but I think we've gutted it away, and the Education Committee on our side, on the Senate side, really worked to try to address that issue. So I'll stop right there, Mr. Chairman. Happy to answer any questions and have a brief PowerPoint if there are any questions.
Thank you so much for that brief introduction. Are there any questions before we see the presentation from committee members?
Chair Ruffridge, will there be an opportunity after the presentations to ask questions as well?
I would certainly think this is our only thing on the agenda, so As long as we wrap them up by 10 a.m.
I won't ask anything now.
Okay,
thank you.
Excellent. All right, well, it looks like we're ready for a presentation.
For the record, Hunter Lotzel, staff to Senator Murkowski. So I'm going to start with the PowerPoint presentation right here. So our bill, Financial Literacy, Senate Bill 99. What is financial literacy? Essentially, it's having the understanding of how to effectively and efficiently use your own money responsibly. So understanding how much you earn and spend, responsibly managing debt, and ultimately the reasons these are important is so you can achieve personal goals and have that financial security later in life. So part of the reason we need it, as Senator mentioned, only a third of Americans can comfortably cover a $400 emergency. The average credit card debt in the state is $8,026. The next highest was New Jersey with $7,000 approximately. The average student loan debt is around $34,000 here in the state of Alaska. And 50% of that approximately is people 35 and younger. Alaska just recently received an F grade rating from the American Public Education Foundation on their national report card concerning financial literacy. So Senate Bill 99 adds a half credit requirement, which is essentially a semester long class, approximately 60 to 90 hours of instruction. And it should cover a range of topics, but briefly, just about making a budget, avoiding fraud and financial deception, the basics of investment and retirement accounts, and I think particularly important is the element of understanding financial aid and scholarships. So after a meeting in the Senate Education Committee, we had a meeting with other stakeholders. We had a few changes. Instead of making it one course, we made it a program so as that it can be spread across multiple classes. I think as, you know, ASD is moving to the academy model, for example, we are seeing the need to engage students and make what are maybe seen as like academic subjects more applicable to the real world. So I think ideally, potentially a school district could integrate this over math courses, history courses, other elective courses. We've gotten broad support for the bill from different school districts, school board members, superintendents, teachers, students even, and concerned parents. And if you have any questions, I'm happy to try to answer them as best I can.
Very good. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, thank you for both of you for your work on this. And I think we all know it's really important, and I appreciate the information that you showed us. I want to talk a little bit about the funding, because I know that it was going to take some administration time. If you're going to have 60 to 90 hours of instruction is required with the 0.5, someone is going to have to coordinate how they're getting 60 to 90 hours if you are a district where you don't have the funds to hire 0.5, and you'd have to find in a bigger district you've had to hire several of them to start teaching this class. So I'm wanting to know, it seems to me there should be an administrative fee for the districts, because someone is going to have to coordinate this to verify it. And that's my question. How are they going to verify it? And can there be some funds for that?
Through the chair, there is a fiscal note that was attached to this from the DEED, from the Department of Education and Early Development. It's for $71,000. It's an initial one-time fund. And it has some funding for stipends for 20 educators and community stakeholders for participating in the development of a rubric for evaluation to evaluate courses $35,000 to contract an education expert to facilitate the development of a rubric and evaluation courses, and $6,000 for legal fees for regulatory changes. So there is a fiscal note for the state. There is no additional funding for the school districts for this.
Follow-up? Does it seem to you that there should be some money for the districts to having to keep coordinating this, at least at the beginning, till they know the framework of how it will be delivered?
Through the chair, the way that this is envisioned is that either schools will incorporate this in courses that they're currently teaching already. And so as an example, in math courses and economics courses, and so those would be incorporated. And then the curriculum through that $71,000 grant would be creating the rubric, and that would be passed on to the schools. If schools chose to have their own individual courses, then that would, of course, cost money to fund that additional teachers. But that's not a requirement, and that's something that we've worked with school districts and school boards and superintendents on, so that we could keep the costs as low as possible, because I know how challenging it can be to get funding for things like this.
One more follow-up, please. Thank you. And I appreciate that there is some funding in here for DEED to coordinate it and stipends for teachers to get it going, but I see with different districts, just to turn in the documentation and put it together, I think it will definitely cost them some money. A follow-up question that I had, because I see this as a requirement for to graduate, is, and I'm thinking about when we had the high school qualifying exam, we oftentimes had kids transfer in when they were seniors or traveling or with the military or whatever, and to fit it into their graduation requirements if they had something to, was difficult at times. And I'm wondering if there can be, if there should be in this bill, an amendment to address transfer students coming in their senior year, that this could be waived through a process. But have you talked about that at all?
Through the chair, that's a great question. We're happy to look into that. That issue has not come up. I know that there are, my understanding is 22 states that do offer financial literacy software. Some of them on the state, I guess there's a 50% chance that would be accomplished through that. And since this would be a statewide requirement, it would be required that it would be taught in all across the state. So presumably kids would be getting it in other areas of the state, but we can certainly look into that transfer issue and see what kind of concerns. I've not heard that issue raised so far.
Thank you.
Other questions for Senator Murkowski? Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. I believe you mentioned that Alaska has the worst loan application rate. Did that infer that people are not even trying to get in debt anymore? That doesn't seem possible. Or is that just a misunderstanding?
Thank you, Representative, through the chair. I may have misspoke on that. My understanding is we have the lowest percentage of students who apply for student financial aid.
Oh, financial. Okay. Okay. And I'll let somebody else have a chance, but I have another one.
Does anybody else want to go before Representative Prox has a second? Yes. Representative Hemshue.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. I'm just confirming we'll have another opportunity for questions after invited testimony.
Absolutely.
I'll just hold off till then. Thank you.
Representative Prox.
All right. Thank you. I'm surprised that I guess we think it isn't taught, because are we sure that these subjects, these topics, aren't being covered in school? Way back when there were specific topics, specific classes, but when my two sons were going through high school, these topics were covered in Norfolk.
Through the chair, I'm sure there are some schools that may have been teaching these things, and I know, again, I'm aware that Anchorage School District has recently made it a requirement for financial literacy. I know that Haynes has made it a requirement for to teach financial literacy. So some school districts may have this as a requirement, may have had it for many years, and others don't. I think the specific things that we have laid out here, I'm not aware that all schools in Alaska are teaching these things.
Okay.
I don't think that's the case right now.
Let me just state the reason I'm kind of pressing this is I'm not sure that it is a question of not understanding. It's a motivation in my mind. People are just becoming so discouraged, why bother? And I don't know that this is going to address something. And then giving another mandate to the schools, when you tell somebody to do something, they don't want to do it. So I appreciate the thought and whatnot, but that's just my thoughts on this.
Thank you, Representative Prox. Any other questions before we move to invited testimony? All right, seeing none. We do have a couple of folks online, and then we do, I'll start with, we have Deb Riddle from the Department of Education. She is available for questions. And then we are joined by Leola Rutherford. She is a sixth grade teacher in Girdwood with the pre-K through eighth grade school there. And then we are also joined by Flora Tejo, Junior Achievement of Alaska. And we will be hearing from both of those folks. But we will start with Leola. If you could please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is Leola Rutherford. I'm a sixth grade teacher in Girdwood, Alaska. I'm a third generation teacher, and my passion is financial literacy. So to Representative Prax's question, you know, are we motivated to teach it? The answer is yes. The reason why I'm in support of SB 99 is because it's an equity of access issue. So while it may be being taught in classrooms like my own, where you have a passionate teacher who believes and sees the benefits of teaching financial literacy, even at the sixth grade level, it's not guaranteed that every student, when they graduate from high school in the state of Alaska, receives it. This is a grassroots, bipartisan movement. We have gone from 3 years ago, only eight states in the United States requiring a semester of financial literacy for graduation, to today, just this last month, we added the 25th state. So now half of the states in the United States require a semester of financial literacy education, like SB 99, for a high school graduation requirement. And as Senator Walikowski so eloquently put it, Alaska, it's embarrassing. We currently have an F rating on the nation's report card, and we can do so much better. If we pass this legislation, we're going to guarantee that everyone gets this essential education that ensures that they are career and life ready. Alaska, when you're asking the question, do teachers want to teach it? The answer is an overwhelming yes. So I'm a NEA delegate assembly just earlier this month. I proposed a resolution, and it was overwhelming support from the teachers across Alaska for SB 99. Legislative NBI 2427 guaranteeing access for financial literacy and education states that NEA Alaska shall lobby for legislation like SB 99 that guarantees access to personal financial education by ensuring that a semester of financial literacy is required to be offered in high schools across the state of Alaska. That's our from Delaware school, so apologies for the background. And then if you want to know if parents and students want it, 76% of all high school graduates said they want it taught. 88% of adults surveyed said they want their children to get at least a semester of financial literacy education. And I urge you to join your colleagues in the Senate and passed SB 99 with a swift and overwhelming support. There were 13 bipartisan co-sponsors, and it received a unanimous vote. Please help us guarantee access so every student in the state of Alaska has this quality education and financial literacy that they need. As far as the transfers and seniors, I know when we implemented the Alaska Studies requirement, there was verbiage in there that helped ensure that people who transferred in could still graduate with that requirement. I'm sure we can do the same thing for SB 99. And then as far as why it should be taught, it's not. You would think it's common sense, but it's not, and it's changing. There's things like buy now, pay later that I didn't know about. And through support for teachers is there to learn and be current on this. There are paid programs, but there's also nonprofits like Next Gen Personal Finance. 34% increase. Alaska from last year had teachers register for their free account. Alaska now ranks number 4 in new teacher accounts for this. So teachers are eager to get this education. It's offered free professional development. There is free curriculum. And there's teachers like me who are already putting on professional development in statewide conferences for their colleagues to help get them to be bringing this valuable curriculum to their students. Please pass SB 99.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Rutherford? Representative Hemshute.
Through the chair, Ms. Rutherford, this is Rebecca Hemshute, House District 2. Thank you for your testimony and for all you do. I know you're a very energetic teacher there in Girdwood. Can you speak a little bit more about, I guess, online curricula that could deliver? So the district that I represent is very rural. We have a lot of very small schools in my district. So we don't have that, what do you call that, economy of scale where someone can work with someone else to create something. It's going to be one teacher on their own time creating something if this bill passes. So is there an online curriculum? You mentioned Next Gen Personal Finance. Is there anything available online, either free or with a subscription rate that could be covered by the state, for example? So can you talk a little bit about, and then specifically in that question, I guess I'm asking about these 15, and I understand the ANCs would probably have to be more local, but the 14 requirements of the bill. Is there a curriculum that covers all of those?
So through the chair, the good news is yes. So Next Gen Personal Finance is one of the 4 curriculums that I use to create a program. I really like SB 99 because of the things that are delineated. And no, the Alaska one, that would need to be added. But through like Canvas Learning Management System, we can share modules. That's what I'm doing already with other teachers across the state to get free access to that curriculum. I use Next Gen Personal Finance. That's the core of my curriculum because it is always current. It's online. It's free. It's adaptable. It comes with free professional development. There is a complete high school curriculum. I teach the middle school curriculum. And there's also, this is the one I'm really excited about, the financial algebra. So how many times in school do we get the question of when am I ever going to use this? That's never the question with the financial literacy lessons that I teach, and I integrate those into my math classes as well.
Thank you.
Oh, and so besides Next Gen Personal Finance, there's C that I use. They have a whole free guest speaker series that I Zoom in with my kids, and so that's the Foundation for Economics Education. There's Bonsai Education. That's another free online program that's more game-based, and so I supplement for engagement and interactive. And then there's also the JA, Junior Achievement. They have full free curriculum, and they have volunteers who will come in and be guest speakers and co-teach with teachers to bring this curriculum. All of that is free.
thank you for that answer. Representative Story, did you have a question?
Yes. Through the chair, thank you to Ms. Rutherford for your testimony today and for your enthusiasm. I can feel it. My concern, and as you talk to your peers, when the district does put a requirement on teachers, do they, I hear you saying that they will be doing this within the school day, and they will be finding time to do their own training on financial literacy. Do you have a lot of, from what I hear from teachers is they don't have a lot of time to add something inside their school day. So I'd appreciate a comment on that, because I know you said they overwhelmingly teachers voted in support of this. Was that thinking that on their own time they would be learning how to take a financial literacy course, finding one? And then my other thing is quality of delivery. I know we usually expect teacher training, so we're making sure when we have access that they're getting key points in and there are some benchmarks. And so how do you see the district providing those at no cost?
Okay, through the chair, to the first question about on teachers' own time. Here's the beauty of financial literacy education. Teachers are hungry for this information too. So they, when they take the training, it not only helps their students, but it also helps them personally. So I'm learning things all the time. It's exciting. We're motivated to take it because we can see real life application in our own lives, having the benefit of knowing this curriculum. So how do you integrate it in? Well, in a lot of times, like in sixth grade, we do a semester of economics. And so I integrate financial literacy there. I also have morning meetings. And so I do a question of the day with financial literacy. The beauty of SB99 is that it has that flexibility for every school, every district to find what's going to best fit their own students and meet their needs within the schedules that they have. This isn't a one-size-fits-all. It wouldn't work that way. And that's why I'm really in support of the way SB99 is structured, because it really does speak to that very need that you talked on. And as far as benchmarks go, that's the other beauty of SB99. It delineates out here. It's aligned with the National Jumpstart Standards for Financial Literacy. So this is standards-based. We have benchmarks to meet because we can compare ourselves to the nation. And then, like, there's a WISE certification test. So I took that and got certified as a teacher, but they also have a test that high schoolers take across the nation to verify that they have reached this benchmark of financial literacy knowledge. Now, while that's not a requirement here, I think that's a good option to push.
Thank you.
Any further comments? Thank you, Ms. Rutherford, for that testimony, and appreciate you being here this morning. We will next move to Flora Teo, the Junior Achievement of Alaska. You could please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, through the chair. Good morning. This is Flora Teo, and I am the president of Junior Achievement of Alaska. Junior Achievement is a privately run nonprofit that has been embraced by businesses in 55 communities statewide, so that allows business leaders to go into schools to partner with educators to provide financial literacy and work readiness and entrepreneurship to 15,000 K-12 students in Alaska at no cost to the schools of the district. Junior Achievement has a 50-year history on this issue in Alaska, and JAUSA has been working for over a century with the same goal as SB99, to ensure the youth of today enter adulthood with understanding of the fundamentals of personal finance and business. True, Alaska is only one of three states where the legislature has not addressed financial literacy as an important part of its state's educational curriculum. Other states have a requirement for at least a unit all the way up to the elective course, which it sounds like that is a movement across the nation up to 22 states in the previous testimony. So In general, Alaska Junior Achievement wants to lend our broad support for SB 99 because Alaska needs to be graduating students that understand the mechanics of personal finance and how applying these concepts lead to a better quality of life. So passing a bill that mandates Alaska students have a comprehensive understanding of personal finance is significant, and leadership from Juno on this issue is needed. So, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Ms. Tao? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, I don't have a question right now, but I did want to pass on my thanks to everyone who's involved with Junior Achievement. We have been very fortunate in Juno to have excellent people come out and deliver those lessons to the children in our classes and youth, and I know they enjoy them greatly. So thank you.
Representative Hemshu.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, Ms. Tao, I also would like to express my gratitude and own my role as the 2010 Alaska Junior Achievement Teacher of the Year, and I got to share a stage with Senator Ted Stevens, which was a highlight of my life, so thank you for that opportunity. My question for you right now is whether your organization tracks where JA is offered. For example, I do represent a very rural district, and as a rural educator in Sitka, which is the largest town in my district, I was received that wonderful honor. So what about districts smaller than Sitka School District? Are you able to get into places like Dunapachuk or, in my own district, places like Heidelberg or Pelican? So does your organization track how broadly you're able to get into those more rural districts? And then the second question, the follow-up to that, would be about online options with JA.
Okay, yeah, great. No, great question. So the answer is yes. Starting in 2010, we created the Rural Alaska Initiative that partners Alaska Native corporations with their regional village schools. So for one day a year, they fly out and they spend the whole day teaching financial literacy. And what's great about that is that it's right, you cannot approach this with a one-size-fits-all approach, and those cultural nuances are so important. And particularly when it comes to financial management. And the more that we can align it to the environment that students are learning in, the more effective we know it is. And the other thing it does, this is an option for schools that, you know, maybe they don't have a teacher that wants to, you know, I'm sure all teachers do, but if there is one or if they need more resources, they could request a junior achievement volunteer who comes out trained, ready to present this. And that information is tracked on a national basis. We are in 28 school districts statewide, including 100% of the Northwest Arctic Borough School District, all of those regional villages, about half of the North Slope Borough School District, and 100% of the Kodiak Island, which actually their trips start next month. So this is just another option for educators. So it is tracked and reported nationally for student participation. It's also evaluated. So volunteers can go in and, learn how much they have moved the needles after spending one day with the students. And then as far as online curriculum, Junior Achievement is available in both Google Classroom, Canvas. We also have an online program called JA Connect so that the lessons can be on demand and self-paced for students. It can also be teacher-led if that's what they're looking for. And Junior Achievement even goes one step further in that if there's a teacher that teaches JA financial literacy, that those students are eligible for college credit that's recognized from 17 universities in the United States, including the University of California school system. So there could be additional benefit for the students to take a real full long semester course. And Junior Achievement courses start all the way at kindergarten and go all the way up to 12th grade so that those students are getting small drips of this content, I guess, so that it's shared by all educators along that student's pathway instead of just one semester course at the very end. So as far as we want to be here as a solution provider for both the schools and the business community.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Tao, can you elaborate a little bit when you said they go, I love that you have this partnership with the various corporations. So when they go out for a day, do they go every year and then they do a day in like sixth grade, a day in seventh grade, a day in eighth grade? I'm trying to get to the 60 to 90 hours recommended, but I don't think the 60 to 90 hours is in the bill. But anyway, is it a cumulative thing where they go out and they do multiple grades, or is it one visit for one day, one grade? I'm just trying to understand the scope of it. Thank you.
Okay, great question. The answer is yes to both. So it, because it's not a requirement right now, some schools do get it one day a year, and then the next year the volunteers go out and they teach a different program. So it is cumulative, and that's why it's tracked that way. For school districts that want something that's 60 to 90 hours a week, the volunteer, the teacher, is the one who is trained on the program, and they receive a 500-level professional development credit from the University of Alaska that the business community pays for. They teach the semester-long course, and the volunteers come in as more subject matter experts and present whatever part of the curriculum that the teacher, feels that would benefit the students most if they heard it from an outside voice. And, that, just again, to give more flexibility. So to answer your question, yes to both. it's done in both one day, but also could be a 60 to 90 hour semester long elective, both which involve a volunteer, just at different, at different rates. And also, in the kindergarten class, for example, one day is a lot even for them. but then it continues in first grade and second grade each year that the volunteers go back to the village.
Thank you, through the chair, Ms. Teo. I also just wanted to congratulate you on the most recent, I don't know what it's called, Alaska Business, the magazine, featured JA, and it was a wonderful publication. And I know that when I was working with JA volunteers in Sitka, it was wonderfully appropriate, active, relevant, hands-on curriculum that was appropriate to the grade level. So you have an incredible offering, and I appreciate your work. Thank you.
Other questions, comments for our invited testifier? All right, seeing none, thank you to both of our testifiers, Ms. Rutherford and Ms. Teo, for being with us this morning, which brings us back to other committee questions, comments for the bill sponsor. Representative Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Rutherford. May I ask a question of Ms. Riddle, who's on the phone from the department?
Please. Ms. Riddle, if you're with us, if you could just introduce yourself for the record, and it sounds like Representative Story might have a question for the division.
Hi, thanks. My name is Deborah Riddle, and I am the Division Operations Manager for the Division of Innovation and Education.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Yes, and thank you, Ms. Riddle. You have been with us as a wealth of knowledge for several years. How many years have you been working for the department?
I've been with the, through the chair, I've been with the department for 12 years.
12 years, okay, thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Riddle, I am looking at the fiscal note, and I have been curious, when the department is putting together a fiscal note for how the bill will affect the department, if you can give me some history about why does the department not give a fiscal note when they think something is going to cost the district money? I can imagine when the department thinks about this that they know if it's a half a credit, which is 60 to 90 hours, that's going to have to be documented. And I appreciate the bill's flexibility that they know it's happening in economics or whatever. I don't know if they take that student and they have to track when they're going to get it. I can't visualize that right now, how that happens. But I think about the professional training that is required for the district, because it makes sense to me that they're going to want to make sure their staff is delivering this and they're trained to deliver in it and they're comfortable with it and if they have questions. So I'm wondering, and we just had a civics a bill going through that would require civics classes. And when I looked at that fiscal note, I don't see any sort of acknowledgement that it will cost the district's money. Why does the department not estimate that?
Through the chair, this is Deb Riddle for the record. When we create our fiscal notes, we look at what it's going to cost our particular fund sources. I can find out some more specific information as to why we don't make estimates for the districts, and I have a lifeline going right now and see if I can get an answer for you. But typically we look at how the fiscal note will affect the budget of the department. But I can get more information.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just want to comment and say thank you for bringing this forward. I think this will be transformative for a lot of kids, especially from the district that I represent. However, I do share some of the concerns that Representative Story has expressed about unfunded mandates. That seems to be a perpetual problem in some of the districts I represent, but that's not my question. What I was curious to know about, I really like the flexibility that's been added in the CS. I guess just my question with that is, I think that the districts that I represent really pride themselves on making their curriculum as relevant as possible. And so with that, I'm just kind of wondering what is the limits to that flexibility? You know, I'm thinking like this might even be applicable in like a survival skills course. No, that might sound silly, but like I really think that, you know, if we want to provide relevant education, I guess I would just like to know to what's the limit on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair, Representative. So this concern was brought up in the Senate Education Committee, and one of the things that was added was on page 1, line 13. 12 and 13, where it says the program must include to the maximum extent practicable. And the discussion was exactly as you're saying. In some communities, it just might not be practicable for this information to be taught. And I think this helps address to some concern some of the really small schools that we have out there. But also, there might be some schools that, some of the small schools where some of the things just might not be practical. They're just not at all relevant. So that was a provision that was added in the Senate Education Committee to try to address some of those concerns that I think might be having.
Representative Storr?
Through the chair, follow-up. Senator, can you help me understand that a little bit more? It says in line 11, a school may not issue a secondary school diploma to a student unless the student has completed a financial literacy program under this section. And then the program must include to the maximum extent practical. I understood that, but the sentence before, it says the district has to have it. And so even if they can't, does a sentence need to be said that the district can get a waiver if it's not practical that they add this course?
No. Okay, through the chair. The intent is that, as it says, that you have to get it. You have to have a financial literacy program. However, the things that are included, the 15 items that are included on after that, it says the program must include to the maximum extent practical. So, for example, if you're, quite frankly, in a small school district and you absolutely can't get anyone to teach about basic computation of income taxes, or you can't get anyone to teach about the financial implications of being a member of a beneficiary of a neighbor corporation, for example. If you can't do that, then, and you've gone to the maximum extent practical, then you don't have to do that. The intent is you have to teach financial literacy. And you can do it through a variety of different ways. But if for some reason you can't teach a particular section here, then you can alter that in some way that makes it more palatable for your particular area, for your particular school.
Paula, thank you for that explanation, Senator Wilikowski. It says each school shall, on line 6 and 7, shall develop this program, and then the course needs to be approved by the department. So someone and each school is going to have to put together a flexible curriculum of some sort, even if it's pulling through junior achievement, they're going to be here for 8 hours, then, you know, how to get to the 50 hours in the class. And to me, that seems like it's going to take some finance resources on the part of the district, or else we're adding to administrative cost, I mean, time without cost. So that is a concern, and that there should be a fiscal note added to this bill to help maybe small districts or all districts where they're going to have to do documentation. So I'm concerned about that, but I appreciate what's in here, but I'm going to try and see how can we maybe help on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Hampshire.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, Senator, the 60 to 90 hours is not in the bill. Can you drill down on the 60 to 90 hours? At least I don't see it there.
Thank you, Representative, through the chair. So the requirement is on page 1, line 10, where it's it says programs hours of instruction must be in the aggregate be equivalent to one half credit hour course. So I don't know off the top of my head how much a half credit is, but I'm assuming it's between 60 and 90 hours. And so that's where that number comes from. What the statute says, the bill says, is one half credit hour course.
Okay. Through the chair, like my colleague across the room there, I'm concerned about districts having to create a curriculum and have it approved by the department, which is how I read lines 7 through 8. Can you speak more about that?
I'm tracking you, I guess. It says what it says. It's each school district shall establish and provide to students in grades 9 through 12 a financial literacy education program approved by the department.
Thank you. Through the chair. So approved by the department, that's what the rubric will be. So the department will have a rubric, and someone in the department will take the 54 plans that come in and score them against the rubric and then coach the district what they're missing or how to. That's the vision.
The vision is if there's a small school district that wants to alter the plan, then the department will review that plan and either approve or deny it.
Through the chair, then on lines 11 through 13 or 11 through 12, the school may not issue a secondary school diploma to a student unless the student has completed a financial literacy program under this section. If a student hasn't completed this for any reason, then they would not be allowed to walk at graduation. Is that correct?
It says.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that was what it says and what you intend. And then through the chair. One more follow-up. Which rural districts have you worked with on this bill?
Through the chair, this bill has been through the Senate. It's been through the Education Committee on the Senate side, and it's been through the Finance Committee. I can't give you the specific names of rural school districts, but we have had rural school districts who've weighed in. I'm not aware of any opposition from rural school districts? If I'm wrong, no. If I could turn to myself, I'm not aware of any opposition from any rural school districts. And we've worked with superintendents all across the state. The Alaska Association of School Boards we've worked with, and I'm not aware of any opposition from any rural school districts.
That's fine. Thank you. So through the chair, I reached out to superintendents. I have 11 school districts in my district, and I didn't give them a lot of notice, so I just kind of popped the question out there, what do you think of this bill? And you're correct. My findings are also that there's a lot of support for this bill, but every superintendent who responded to me said the word shall is causing them a lot of concern, and so I'm going to be looking for a solution for this. You know, it feels like another mandate in the face of flat funding for several years. And so the value of it is clear. Everyone loves it, including me. The issue, as much as there is an issue, is in the word shall. One district wrote, the word shall is concerning if there are no monies, also provided through this bill to districts for the review, selection, and purchase of instructional materials to support school districts' effort to live, I think they may lean, into the responsibilities outlined in the bill. Another district said, we support this bill, provided the word shall be supported by additional funding to implement this requirement. So in listening to my rural districts, there's some concern. So I think it's a fabulous bill, and what we're trying to do through this bill, I think, is fantastic. But do you have anything you would add about these superintendents and their concerns over the word shall?
Through the chair, we have no opposition. I haven't received any of those letters personally. I guess I would just say that what we in the legislature are doing and what you're doing as the education committee is we're setting policy. And we've got kids who are learning a lot of wonderful theories, like the Pythagorean theories, that they will never, ever use in their life. And from my perspective, I think it's important for us to set as a policy that we want our kids to learn things that they will use and they will need for every single day of their lives. Things like how to make a budget, things like how to open a bank account, things like how to apply for financial aid, because we've got the lowest application rate in the United States. Things like how to open a retirement account. I think those are basic fundamental things that we as a state legislature should say, this is important for our kids' future. And we set the policy. I wish we had more money for these things. I do. And I know you'll have a debate on school funding in the next few days, probably, in the next couple of weeks. But I think from a policy perspective, this is good policy. This is going to help our kids understand the economic realities that they will face when they get out of high school, when they get out of college. And this is particularly an equity issue, quite frankly, because the kids who are from wealthier areas, they probably don't need this. They're probably learning this. It's the kids in the lower income districts like my district, like in rural Alaska, who will benefit the most from a bill like this. This is a basic fundamental equity issue. Our kids need to be learning these things, in my opinion. And I think it's an important bill. We've seen this passed. You know, my understanding was there's 22. There's three more, apparently, that have just recently passed this. States, 25 states, half the country has laws like this. They're figuring out how to do it. I think we should figure out how to do this. I'm happy to work with the rural school districts on issues. If it's a money question, there's a BSA bill that's we've passed it. It's in your body. The fiscal note I've got on this is the fiscal note. I think this is something we need to teach our kids how to do, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. And in truth, I have a couple of comments myself, kind of in that vein. And I guess one of the questions I had was, it is fascinating sort of looking at this bill and working through some of the issue that some of what we're talking about here hasn't been integrated into curriculums already, because to your point, there is a number of things that we teach throughout the high school years with questionable use later on in life. Do you have a history of, sort of how did we get here? Why is this, was this being taught somewhere else? Was this sort of something that people just said they'll get it at home or maybe it doesn't matter? How did we get here? And then I think that the second question I had was, it seems to me that this is an initial upfront issue. Once the curriculum has been established, there's not a lot of changes in how a budget is produced or how you move forward with opening up a bank account. Those things have stayed relatively the same. So once a district establishes their method by which to comply with the regulation or statute that we're looking at here, the effort ongoing really should be minimal. It should be integrated into the schooling. And so I'm not certain as though there is an ongoing cost to this, and I was wondering if that's something that you could speak to as well.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So how did we get here? I think that's a good question. I can't give you sort of history of how we got to what we teach in schools. That's not my expertise, I think. But I can give you sort of my own theory on how we got here. It is in our educational system, it's a lot of theory. It's a tremendous amount of theory. And I see it because my daughter's in a junior now in high school, and I see the classes that she's taking. And it is very abstract. It's very theory-based. It's, you know, algebra, geometry, things like that. And I hear her say all the time, why do I need to learn this? Why am I studying this? And I try to explain to her, I mean, for those of you that have teenagers, you've probably heard this too. And I try to explain to her. And we're seeing this in Anchorage. It's this shift in the model going towards an academy-based system, going towards more real-life application. The vast, vast majority of our jobs in this state don't require college education. They require sort of real-life, maybe either trade or learning how to do plumbing or electrical work or something of that nature. The vast majority of jobs in the state don't require college education. Anchorage is moving towards this academy model, sort of getting a little bit away from the theory model. And I think this is in step with that. And I think we're seeing that across the country in that we want our kids to learn real life practical things that they'll use on a daily basis. I'm not saying the other things aren't important. I'm not saying there's not a good reason to learn the theory. But I am saying real life practical things like this are critical, are absolutely critical to our kids, particularly in low-income districts. I represented Mountain View for many years, a very low-income area in Anchorage. They didn't have a bank in that community for years. And when they bought a bank into Mountain View, it changed the community. They offered financial literacy courses at the bank for free. People would come in. People had no idea. There were people there who had never had a bank account in their life, had never been able to access getting a loan or things like that. And this was a whole new thing. It changed the community. It was a tremendous addition to the community. And I think this is kind of similar because you have all these kids out there in a lot of very poor areas who have no idea how to do any of these things, and we'll be providing them with that. That'll be a tremendous asset for them. So how did we get here? That's a bigger philosophical issue, but I think where we need to go in the future is teaching kids more practical things like this. And then your second question is, once established, are the costs sort of set? I would say they probably are. I think once the curriculum is established, then this isn't rocket science that we're teaching kids. This is basic fundamental things that, quite frankly, if you're an algebra teacher, if you know algebra, it's probably going to be pretty easy for you to teach interest rates, for example. It's probably going to be pretty easy for you to teach basic fundamentals of how you balance a budget. That's a great thing, I think, to incorporate in a math class. I think there are probably lots of kids who would rather learn how to do a budget, how to do interest rates, real life applicable things, how to apply for a credit card, than how to learn Pythagorean theorem, which they'll never use again in their life. So I think once this is established, absolutely, it's probably something that's going to carry on, and it'll be tweaked over the years. But again, there's a lot of information out there online for free. There's a lot of information that's being used. There's 25 other states that are doing this. We don't have to reinvent the wheel and have every school district hire someone and create a whole new curriculum to do this. There's a lot of information out there to do it.
Thank you.
Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's a difference, an important difference, between a good idea and a good law. And I think that's what we're overlooking in this particular bill. Well intended. Thank you for thinking about it and for being concerned. And I think that's what was, that's my objection to the civics bill as well. It's a good idea to teach civics. It's bad law to teach civics. It's a good idea to teach business education. It's bad law to require people to take business education, because I stated before it was motivation. And it wasn't, I don't mean teachers not motivated or whatever, but you can't require somebody to be motivated, whether the student or the teacher or anyone else. And that's what we're trying to do. And teaching, in this case, financial literacy works because there were enthusiastic people. Like we heard of the teacher that is enthusiastic about it, the Junior Achievement Program, because those folks are enthusiastic about it. That's why it works. and we can't require people to be enthusiastic. And so what do we do? Nothing. It's odd. It's really odd that 50 years ago, it would be our 50th class anniversary this year, these materials were taught. There was two levels of economics. You could learn the same thing one way or the other. And one of them was consumer economics. The other one was just plain old economics. But you learned the same sort of principles. Why did they stop teaching that? Maybe because they were required to teach something else. I don't know. Crazy. The financial literacy program that I think they were alluding to, I participated in that several years ago. Goodness, 10 years ago. Out at the North Pole High School. And there were all kinds of enthusiastic presenters. Not everybody, but some of them you could tell were voluntold to be there. But the students came in and they were just not interested in that at all. The students weren't as motivated as the adults were, and didn't really accomplish much. And it's, I'm not blaming anybody, but you can't. It's motivation that's required, and you can't mandate motivation. But you can kill motivation. Back when I was in school, again in the 70s, I don't remember exactly how it came along, but there was concern or news that the college students in Europe were not motivated. And I was in high school. Dorothy Dale was her name, the teacher. She was teaching history at the time. And we're discussing and debating this, and her comment was, well, and the Cold War was really going at the time. She says, well, if you think you're going to be blown up by a nuclear bomb sometime soon, what's the point of planning your future? And there was something to that, that we were so concerned about everything that was beyond our control, just demotivated people. And today, goodness, if it's not PFAS, if it's not particulate pollution, if it's not global warming, oh my God. So what's the point of live? All we got is just more problems and problems and problems that we're dealing with. And we're killing initiative by this. It isn't requiring somebody to do something extra isn't going to accomplish much, no matter how well intended it would be. I'm going probably off topic. So. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Brox. For some reason, I feel like I'm looking forward to seeing your bill requiring motivation.
Yes.
<It'll> be. Representative McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, and thank you, Senator Wilkowski, for bringing this forward. You know, it's a great idea. I just, sometimes when I'm sitting and listening to some of our proposals here in Juneau, I think about, okay, we're going to have 54 school districts that are going to have 54 different financial literacy plans times 4 years of school. That's 216 different plans, you know, and who's going to be the officer that decides that your financial literacy plan for Sitka, Juneau, Bethel, Kaktovik are adequate? And I'd hate to have a situation where you get, well, let's say Zach's in 12th grade and he's going to graduate, and somebody comes in and says, well, too bad your financial literacy program was not adequate. So, Zach, I'm sorry, you're not going to graduate. Seems like, you know, we're putting this into law. Who's going to be the arbiter? Who's going to say, yes, your plan is adequate up front? Because, you know, you'd hate to have a deficiency when you get to the end of the school year, right? And I'm all for local control. It seems maybe more logical that there would be a module created maybe at the state level that would be available and acceptable, and everybody teach this instead of having 54 different program. So I'm just trying to give some helpful advice, Senator, and certainly don't oppose the idea. Obviously, a very good idea. Just want to kind of think about some of the unintended consequences and how are you going to measure the quality of the program and how are you going to enforce it. And I don't know if that needs to be in the bill, but these are just things I'm thinking about. I think we kind of do this a lot down here. We make laws, but we don't think about, well, how are you really going to make it happen. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative McKay. That may be a question answered.
By the way, I like the Pythagorean theorem as an engineer. You know.
Maybe Ms. Riddle could speak to the question that Representative McKay brought forward, but first I'll bring that to you, Senator, if you had any comments on that.
Yeah, just maybe to address Representative Fox's question, we can work on an amendment to require motivation. that'd be great. It's this tension that we face all the time on local control versus state mandate, and we try to balance that with this bill. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all necessarily, because we have such a wide, diverse array of school districts. And so we'll hear from Deed in a minute, but we set it up in a way that Deed is going to look at what is submitted, and they'll say yes or no. They put in a fiscal note for that. I don't see that as a problem. I think Deed is going to, they'll hire somebody and have somebody that's on staff look at it and make sure that the school districts are complying. And there's flexibility built into the program, so it balances that us as policymakers saying, hey, we think financial literacy is important. We think, and that's ultimately what you're really deciding. Is something we think kids should be learning, and then we want to give school districts as much control as possible with just having a basic framework in place.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Riddle, is that something that you would like to provide any additional comment on for the department's role in this?
Through the chair, this is Deborah Riddle. The idea of the rubric was to provide, first of all, the department something to make sure that we're hitting all the checkpoints, but also to help the district. If, when they get the copy of the rubric back, be able to make any adjustments if needed if the course was improved. So it's kind of a helping both the district and the department make sure that the courses are meeting requirements. All right,
thank you. Other questions, comments? Representative Story?
Thank you. Through the chair, I think it's really important that the policy decisions that we can make them and influence them. But I also think it's very important that we fund them. We have the READS Act. Districts are trying to put that in there. We had not given them increased dollars to do that adequately, so it's not going to happen unless we fund it. Same with our civics bill that we have before us. If we don't fund it, we can feel good. We put it into policy. We put it into law. But if we don't back it up with the dollars to deliver, I think about, sure, we're going to create a curriculum. It's there. But we have a high teacher turnover. There's going to be ongoing costs to train teachers so they deliver it well. So our students are motivated by the teacher and their enthusiasm or their understanding, and it's really good in-depth lessons. And I know you want that. I know we all want that. And that makes us have to step up as the policy and put dollars behind what we're asking districts to do. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. We're fooling ourselves that our kids are going to read by third grade, that we're going to get good financial literacy if we don't train and fund. So that's my big concern with the bill. The other concern is that they can't graduate without completing this bill. I think that will have a lot of repercussions that we have seen before with the high school qualifying exam. So I have some, those are my concerns.
Thank you, Representative Story. I do feel like the senator has answered at least a couple of those concerns. Is there any other comments you'd like to give to that? All right. Any additional comments, questions? All right. Seeing none, I will like to put out to the committee that I will set an amendment deadline for this bill which is next Thursday, February 1st at noon. So please have amendments into my office by then. And then we will set this bill aside and bring it forward after that date, and I will work with the senator's office to put that together. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for giving us a presentation on this bill. Any other additional comments or questions for the good of the order? Seeing none, this will then conclude the meeting of the House Education Committee. With no other business before us, we will adjourn until Monday, January 29th at 8 a.m. And let the record reflect the time is 9:11 a.m. and we are adjourned.